Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. When you see a book about the history of infectious disease and its relationship with the course of human endeavor, you might expect that book to be written by a medical researcher, a demographer, or infectious disease specialist. Certainly not a scholar of antiquity and the classical world. But the book Plagues Upon the Earth, Disease and the Course of Human History, is just that, a deep dive into how human development has, as a byproduct, unleashed diseases upon humans, and how domestication first unleashed animal-to-human transmissible diseases, how migration and trade spread vector illnesses like plague and malaria, how city dwellers introduced diseases of sanitation and fast-spreading diseases like measles and tuberculosis. My guest today says that for every major advancement in human civilization, it has brought about a surge of new pathogens, which he describes in detail. Kyle Harper is the Provost Emerita and Professor of Classics and Letters at the University of Oklahoma. His previous books have examined how sexual morality transformed under early Christianity and how climate change and diseases contributed to Rome's downfall. In Plagues Upon the Earth, Harper traces disease from humankind's earliest days as a hunter-gatherer to the novel respiratory diseases we currently face in our century. Kyle Harper is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Professor Harper, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Now, this book was 4 years in the making, and of course, it came out of your work on your previous book about Rome's fall, where disease was one of several prime factors. I can't imagine what you must have felt as you're finishing up this book and watching your subject play out in real time. What was that like? How did you react?
It was obviously crazy and surreal, and one of those things in life you would never predict. As you say, I started writing the book in 2017 after finishing my last one, and just I had gotten so fascinated with the role of pandemics and infectious disease in human history. So I wanted to try and tackle a big global history, because I don't think there's been a major global history of disease written by a historian in a long time. And it's a pretty big project, but I wanted to do it in part because I thought that the lessons of history would give us some humility and give us a warning that infectious diseases are inevitable. And even if we have a lot of control over them, there was going to be another pandemic. Well, I, of course, only got about halfway through writing the book when that came to pass. So I wrote the second half of the book as fast as I responsibly could. Definitely writing it during a pandemic was both motivating and challenging. Challenging because, you know, you can't go to the library and got a bunch of little kids that are all of a sudden doing online school and all of the life stuff. But above all, I think it at least gave it some urgency and hopefully some relevance to help us understand how we got here.
Now, one of the things you do, this is a follow-up to a book written a couple generations ago about the history of disease. And you have the ability of looking at what we've learned through the ability to unlock the gene. What have we learned from sort of our 21st century science about pathogens or vectors that we didn't know before?
Well, one of my favorite books of all time is William McNeill's Plagues and Peoples. And some people might remember reading that in college. It's a book people often kind of vaguely remember because it's just a fun book and it's this big picture history of humans and germs. And I love that book. And so I kind of wanted to rewrite it in a spirit of admiration, but also realizing we've learned so much so fast because of the new information we're getting from genetics. And most of us are familiar with the reality of the commercial ancestry companies that can take a swab of your saliva and sequence your DNA and then tell you something about the population history of your ancestors. And the same technologies that have made that so ubiquitous are also creating mass amounts of data, not just about human ancestors, but about the ancestry of everything on the planet, including bacteria and viruses. So just in the last generation, and particularly even in the last decade, we've learned more about the history of some of the pathogens that have made humans sick and killed humans throughout the past than really we even knew we would ever be able to know. It's just astonishing how quickly we've learned so much and are still learning so much about the history of diseases like plague and smallpox and measles and influenza. So as a historian, I think that's exciting, and I try and bring in new sources of knowledge that might come from the natural sciences with traditional histories and chronicles and documents to create a single story.
Can you give us an example of how that new knowledge has changed our understanding of a disease or a way a pathogen vectors in on humans?
Sure. Almost every single disease that affects humans has, in some way, shape, or form, our knowledge of genetics has changed or deepened our understanding of it. Let me give you two really quick examples. One is tuberculosis, a really major respiratory disease that has killed maybe as many humans as any other disease in history. And we used to think that we got TB from our cows because there's a very closely related bacterium that causes the same disease that is specialized in infecting cows. Well, it turns out that actually when you can do the ancestry and put together the DNA, the story is exactly the opposite. Humans gave cows tuberculosis. The human form of the germ is actually the ancestor, and the cow form of the germ is the descendant. So it's totally flipped the way we have to understand how did that disease evolve and how did humans get it. We didn't get it from our cows. We actually gave it to them. And maybe the best example, though, is bubonic plague. It's probably the most explosive disease in human history. It caused the biggest outbreaks, like the Black Death, which, of course, is a very famous disease outbreak in the later Middle Ages. And it's one of the most studied diseases. But now that we know where it came from because of its genome, because its genetics can be deciphered, and particularly because archaeologists have been able to recover its DNA from skeletons of people who died of the plague deep in the past, we're learning about where the disease came from, Central Asia, when it evolved, even before the Bronze Age, how it moved over networks that were connected by black rats. So its DNA is totally filling in this picture of this disease that is incredibly important to understand if we want to understand human history, because it killed maybe half the population of entire continents in the space of a few years. It's an amazing pathogen whose history we're now learning because of genetics.
One of the key tenets, I think, of the book is how globalization, and we have to erase what we think of globalization as a late 20th century, early 21st century term, but globalization in its long form, going back to migration patterns, to the first, ancient world trade, all the way up to jet airplanes, that's always had a tremendous impact on infectious diseases. And it's changed the diseases that might be in your area. It's changed the ability of those diseases to spread quickly. And that's one of the central tenets is the fact that with each change in globalization, there comes a whole new range of pathogens.
That's one of the main arguments that I try and make is that we think of globalization in terms of the kind of modern landscape where you can go to a McDonald's in Moscow and you can hear the same music in Oklahoma that you can hear in anywhere in the world. And that's true, but that's just the very latest chapter in a much deeper story. And every time humans have invented a new transportation technology that lets us move faster and trade more, it integrates populations. And whenever we do that, it has a reaction from microbes. And so every phase of globalization, going back at least to the domestication of the horse, which is the first great kind of watershed in human land transportation, is that we gain control of these remarkable animals that are very fast, learn to ride them, invent wheels. So the horse and the wheel let humans be far more interconnected. No longer are we just dependent on moving around on our own feet, but we can ride these really fast animals. And that meant that populations were drawn closer and closer together. Trade routes across the old world, what we call the Silk Roads, grew up. Every time we've done that, it's had unintended side effects in the realm of infectious disease. So whether it's crossing the Atlantic after Christopher Columbus or the invention of steamships and railroads in the 19th century that really accelerated globalization and brought people closer together than they'd ever been, but also fostered a recognition of the unintended side effects. The 19th century, the age of railroads and steamships, is also the age of cholera, which is kind of a great disease of the 19th century. And it's very much a disease of globalization in that phase, in that chapter of the history of globalization. But I still think we're onto something in recognizing how powerful a force globalization is in our world. We live in an age where jet airplane travel has brought the world so close together that human health is more interconnected than it's ever been. Diseases can travel from one spot to another on the globe in the space of a few hours. As we've learned in the COVID-19 pandemic, we're truly interconnected. And as we're seeing play out in front of us, this phase of globalization is reverberating in the form of a pandemic that we're struggling to contain at all levels globally.
It's interesting. One of the other things I took away was I've had the privilege of interviewing several authors recently that have written about their subjects over long periods of time. It's not quite as long as you have, where they're writing about their subject, whether it's the Supreme Court or policing in America, and they're looking at it over the long arc of time. There's been at least one commonality, and it's that what we recognize as our reality, the way the arc of history seems to, we perceive it today, in many cases, that reality could be an interregnum, the outlier, if you will. And it seems it's the same when it comes to infectious disease. We've had this 100-year period prior to COVID where infectious disease has not really threatened the average person's existence in the way it did with the 1918-19 influenza outbreak and the way it seemingly has with COVID today. Do you sense that this has been an interregnum, or is this a new continuation of the same path?
Well, that's the trillion-dollar question, isn't it? Because we all want to know, once we get COVID-19 under control, are we going to see something like this again in our lifetimes? And that's a question that, you know, we need more than historians. We need not just futurists and prophets, but we need experts in public health and infectious disease to help us understand. But I do think that history can give us important perspective on this. And I guess I'd answer your question like this, that we shouldn't just think of the modern world only as the time when humans conquer infectious diseases, even though to a large extent that's true. If we think about the big picture of human history, the human lifespan, average life expectancy, has more than doubled in modern times. And that's largely, not entirely, but it's mostly due to the control of infectious disease. It's just a reality that we often forget so fast that down until even around 1900, most people, even in the most developed societies economically, most people died of infectious disease most of the time. And for most of our history, life expectancy was 30 or below. And the more than doubling of that life expectancy is largely because humans are ingenious and modern science figures out how to stop infectious diseases with vaccination and public health and clean water and hygiene and antibiotics and so on. So that's an amazing accomplishment. And that's one of the main storylines of the last several centuries of history. But I also think it's one-sided if we don't realize that at the same time, human population has ballooned from 1 billion in 1800 to 1.6 billion to now nearly 8 billion today. And if there's more of us, there's going to be more opportunities for the emergence and transmission of infectious disease. We also live in denser cities, mega cities that have populations that are bigger than the total number of humans 10,000 years ago. And this fosters the transmission of diseases. We use natural resources on a scale we never have. And this means that infectious diseases have a lot of opportunity to emerge and spread between humans. And another storyline in the modern world is that this has been happening not just constantly, but even at an accelerating rate. And so there's been cholera, influenza A, polio, AIDS, and then just in the last few decades, we've seen several diseases make an effort to become really significant global diseases like the Ebola virus. And then finally, one did in COVID-19. So COVID-19 didn't come out of the blue. It stands in a really long line of continuously emerging infectious diseases. I think we know that it won't be the last. There'll be another threat because that's simply the pattern of history, and it's simply the nature of infectious diseases and evolution. So I think we have to eventually step back and try and learn from this pandemic and assess what we can do differently next time, hopefully to keep the next emerging infectious disease from becoming such a destabilizing and deadly event.
Well, again, this idea, it shows up several times in the book, is that we create our diseases. And humans, we have more diseases. And you did some really interesting comparison between, say, primate species and human species. We have way more diseases. They tend to affect us more acutely, and the diseases, the pathogens, they evolve simply to focus on us. And I think it shows up in several areas, but you write of this as sort of the paradox of success. What is the paradox of success?
Well, it's, I think, helpful to try and maybe step back and question some of the assumptions we might have about human health and disease. And we can do that one way, among others, is by comparing ourselves to other animals like chimpanzees. And if you compare the diseases that humans have and chimps have, there are some similarities. We have some of the same closely related worms and other kinds of parasites. But actually, humans are far more diseased. And in fact, this is a really strong pattern that humans suffer from a really unusual number of pathogens. And a lot of them are really extraordinarily virulent. So diseases like measles and smallpox that are very contagious, spread very quickly, and really, really shouldn't survive very long if they only are capable of infecting one host. So a number of diseases are really specialized in the infection of us, whereas a lot of the diseases that infect other animals have to be able to swap around between different possible host species. So why do we have so many diseases, and why are they so nasty and so peculiarly focused on infecting us? The short answer is our history. We have a history that really does make us distinctive. And we've been able to expand over the planet, occupy virtually every habitable niche, multiply our populations, domesticate other animals, build cities and transportation networks. And every time we do that, it's driven by technological progress. But the paradox of progress is the reality that when we succeed, our parasites are going to try and take advantage of it. And so to go back to measles, it's an amazing virus that would go quickly extinct if humans didn't build giant cities, because it's so contagious and grants people who survive infection very strong immunity that it does go extinct unless it has populations of hundreds of thousands of people, bodies crowded together that it can infect in a continuous chain. So measles isn't very old, because it couldn't exist until we built giant cities. And we now know that the measles virus emerged around the time that humans had the technologies to build giant cities. And so this is a pattern that recurs over and over in the past. We developed some technology that lets us multiply and have more food and comfort and connectivity. But the downside of that is that it benefits our parasites and gives them a lot of incentive to try and exploit us. So the reason why we have so many germs and they're so nasty is really because of the success we've had as an inventive and creative species.
Speaking of measles, you tell a story at the beginning about how we really began to understand measles. It involves an infection. I believe is it in the Faroe Islands? It's in farther north.
Yes.
Far northern Europe. They'd had an outbreak 40, 50 years before. Then they had another outbreak. And by this point, people are trying to figure out what's happening in the Faroe Islands. Why is measles all of a sudden showed up? And the story is very fascinating. Can you share it with us, a little bit of it?
Yeah, I love this little story. It is a cool little nugget from history. And it really was important in an important moment in the middle of the 19th century, when scientists are starting to figure out, and the consensus is really growing, that infectious diseases are contagious and they're caused by microbes. And this took a long time to prevail as a kind of scientific consensus. It was unusual to believe in things you couldn't necessarily see, much less that there were tiny little microscopic life forms. But the study of this measles outbreak that reaches this tiny little group of islands that are way out there in the North Atlantic and very isolated from everybody and everything else was really a great laboratory to study measles, because the island hadn't seen measles in, I think it was 80-something years. Mm. And then it suddenly reappears in 1846, and measles is so contagious that within a few months, almost everyone on the island got infected with measles, except one group of people, the people who were really old and who had survived it as children in the last outbreak decades and decades before. So this was an important sort of moment that helped people studying diseases realize, one, this is contagious. And there was a Danish doctor who did a remarkable study tracking the spread of the disease by contact that really helped solidify the idea of the transmission of disease by contagion. And it also helped foster ideas about immunity, because it was evident that people who'd survived it once didn't get this disease again. And in fact, the measles virus is really distinct in providing very, very strong and almost lifelong immunity. It's one of the reasons why the vaccine for measles is so stable and so effective, is because the measles virus, we've kind of got it figured out. And this neat little story captures so many of the realities of how infectious diseases work, but also how in the 19th century humans make great leaps forward in understanding the causes of infectious disease.
Earlier, you were talking about how the equation can flip and it can be humans infecting animals. You do that again with a story of the Thai chimpanzees in Africa, in which you can see where a pathogen that we live with pretty regularly, it only affects us when we are weakened, can have devastating effects when it jumps across species.
Yeah, so RSV, which you know many of us are familiar with, respiratory syncytial virus, gives you, it's pretty nasty cold. You're probably going to get it at some point in your life, and you're probably going to survive it. It doesn't kill too many people in the U.S. today, but it's a pretty nasty respiratory cold. It'll put you down for a day or two. You know, kids get it a lot. It's annoying and severe for us, but for chimpanzees, it turns out, it's as deadly as can be. And one of the things that happened, particularly in the late 20th and very early 21st century, is that it was realized that scientists studying chimpanzee populations in Africa were unintentionally sometimes giving them colds and coughs and respiratory infections that for humans are not deadly, but were really decimating chimpanzee populations. And sometimes it may have been the scientists, but it could have been other people, poachers and people who live nearby. But it's become increasingly recognized that to protect these endangered and amazing species, it's very important to make sure that they don't get exposed to what are for us really just kind of common colds.
You write of really interesting work on the Columbian Exchange and the role that infectious disease played in the conquering of the New World by the old. And I think the evidence is still changing on the importance of that. But what did you learn about the Columbian Exchange that gives you new insight into this period of world history?
Well, I think it's important when we imagine Christopher Columbus crossing the Atlantic and Europeans coming across the Atlantic from the 1490s on, that we envision this story, however we imagine it, not just involving humans. Because when Columbus comes back, and we know on the second voyage, he comes back with his ships loaded with animals, and they're bringing pigs and chickens and horses and, you know, every domesticated animal. And this was the beginning of not just the human movements, but massive movements of people, of plants like sugarcane, of animals, but also of microbes. And so the Europeans brought with them a number of infectious diseases that evolved over thousands of years. And these diseases were part and parcel of the encounter between peoples of the old world and peoples in the new world. And we know that there's just very ample and credible evidence that helps us understand that one of the dynamics of European conquest in the 16th century were major disease outbreaks, starting with an epidemic of smallpox in the around 1520 that struck in Mexico and killed millions of native peoples in Mexico. And that was really the beginning of a really long and deadly sequence of disease introductions that continues really into the 17th century, into the colonial period of the United States, when diseases like smallpox, but also measles and diphtheria, whooping cough and typhus are part of a very imbalanced disease exchange. I also think there's a dimension of that hasn't got as much attention as it probably deserves, which is that Europeans are also enslaving Africans and bringing ships from Africa to the New World. And they're bringing African crops, animals, as well as tropical infectious diseases, particularly yellow fever and malaria. Those are both diseases that are introduced from the Old World tropics, from Africa, into the New World tropics, into South America, the Caribbean, and the very southern parts of the United States. And the introduction of malaria and yellow fever are very deadly and are also a very important part of the New World that takes shape in the centuries after European contact.
And that gets beyond what we normally think of, because we think of those created by vectors, you know, mosquitoes transmitting malaria. But in fact, those vectors come along with the other things that are being carried as cargo.
Yes. Well, the answer is actually yes and no. Yes, in the case of yellow fever, and yes, no, in the case of malaria.
Right.
So it's an interesting little wrinkle that the yellow fever virus is transmitted by a species of mosquito, Aedes aegypti, that is now in the New World, but it's actually brought over in the Colombian exchange. So it's an invasive mosquito that's done very well in the New World. Malaria is spread by different kinds of mosquitoes. They're called Anopheles mosquitoes.
Right.
And there actually already were Anopheles mosquitoes in the New World. But the bigger point is that mosquitoes are actually a major player in the history of human disease.
Along with vermin, rats, furry creatures.
Along with rats.
And large mammals, for that matter.
Flies. Yeah. Human health is really part of this broader system of hosts and vectors and microbes.
Yeah. You write of the Great Escape, this period where through modern science and understanding more of the way pathogens work, we've grown actually as a species, you know, because we are larger than we probably were 100 years ago. And you write of this period as sort of this great time when our populations exploded, our abilities in interacting with the modern world are as best as they've ever been. Do you think this in turn will usher in a new era of new pathogens that are dangerous to us or not?
Well, the Great Escape is the name for the amazing progress of the modern world in which people have escaped from almost universal poverty and early death. And so I mentioned that average human life expectancies everywhere were 30 or under for most of our history until really, really recently. And the same can be said of poverty. So most people throughout the past have been simply grindingly poor, simply trying to get enough food to survive. And the modern world is the world of growth and prolongation of life. And these are really amazing achievements that are driven above all by science. It's technology that improves productivity, that is driven by improvements in knowledge of the natural world that frees humanity from the doom of early death and the kind of helplessness in the face of infectious disease. But this success, this amazing escape, also means that we've multiplied, as I said, to now almost 8 billion, that we use natural resources on a scale that has no parallel in the history of the planet. And these are simultaneously what's driving the emergence and evolution of new diseases. And so I think there's good evidence that over the last even just one generation, new diseases have tried to emerge faster than ever before.
Kyle Harper, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kyle Harper is a professor of classics and letters and the provost emerita at the University of Oklahoma. His new book is titled Plagues Upon the Earth, Disease and the Course of Human History. It's published by Princeton University Press. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.